Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back, Sacks and Jacks. After now, Ricky on the board, Jim Lawler in studio. We do have. We're going to go through some college football polls here. We're going to talk about the baseball and a little bit of the football. And the Bears looks good for now. I'm only off one game, Jimmy, but I think I will get, for those that don't know, I had the Bears winning a total of four games. So far, the teams that they've won, I'm right on, but I will have to say I might have to amend my prediction. I thought they would lose to the Commanders, and they won. But I also thought they would beat the Giants, and the Giants are a little better than maybe we thought. But I don't know. What do you think, Jimmy? I think some of these good teams I thought were really, really good aren't so good.
As we said, Chief, coming in, there are a lot of backup quarterbacks. There are a lot of backup quarterbacks. I mean, you have Carson Wentz, you have Jacoby Brissett, you have Joe Flacco. I mean, there are a lot of people that are don't have their quarterback. So
it's hard for me to believe these guys are actually thinking about an 18th game.
It is. It is.
I mean, it seems like. But I, yesterday's game, I'm sitting there watching the first half, and I know I texted you guys going, this New Orleans team is really awful. And then they scored two touchdowns in a row, and I'm thinking, if they lose to these guys, good Lord. I mean, they're terrible.
They did. They scored pretty quick. They scored at the end of the half and then the beginning of the second half.
I mean, the Bears were clearly the better team, but I'm thinking, if they think for a second, if these guys somehow come back and win, I'm like, good Lord. It would be the joke of the century. I mean, how bad are they? That poor coach. He took that team. He must never be able to get another job, huh?
Well, you know, I do think that Ben Johnson's offense, he's got something going now. I mean, I think he's starting to learn what he's got.
Well, the O-line is getting better.
They are.
That's helped pretty dramatically. So I think the middle of the line, they can run the ball a little bit. When you can run, not only do you save time, on the defense is on the sidelines, which helps. We had a couple guys back on defense. That helped. But, they played okay, and the other guys are terrible. So, but I don't know. What they got to play, who next week is the Giants?
I believe it is the Giants, but we can confirm.
Well, now I had them beating the Giants, but now the Giants are playing a lot better. But I also had them losing to everybody in the AFC Eastern Division, and I'm not so sure that's going to happen. I think they might beat the Browns. What's the story with the Ravens? Did everybody just get old at once, or what?
I guess, I mean, Rokon is out. I really don't know what I could say, in regards to their situation. I was also watching, the Chargers game, and God, those were the most ugliest uniforms I've ever seen. Just be yellow.
Yeah, they are tough. Those are bad, and I mean, there's a few others that are bad, but we got to get these the college things up here in a second, and but I wonder. If the Ravens lose like one more game, they might play themselves out right out of it.
They could. I mean, you look at it this way, the Chiefs started out bad. Now they seem to have come back together.
And maybe other people have kind of fallen apart. I mean, okay. The Buffalo, they got no offensive line now, pretty much. Uh-huh. So, I mean, this is for those that don't know, we'll go through this real quick. The Patriots, who I thought, beginning of the year, I had them in the suck column, but they obviously made quite a return comeback this year. They're 5-2. They're ahead of the Bills. The Bills play tonight, or do they get a bye week?
I believe, let's find out who plays tonight. Let's go to the schedule.
And that's the AFC East. The Central is Steelers or the Chargers.
We have two tonight, and they must have a bye week. The games tonight are the Tampa Bay-Detroit. That should be pretty good. And then Houston-Seattle.
That should be all right, too. Kevin just said the Giants are 2-5, so they're not better. But the one game I saw them, they looked better. But maybe they aren't. So the Bears might be able to. I don't know if they're getting better. Or the other guys are falling around. But
well, we have the Ravens is who we are playing.
Okay, so the Ravens are probably figuring they can jump up on these guys. But the Steelers are 4-2. The Bengals are after that 3-4. The Browns and the Ravens. This is the group that, for those that don't know, everybody, every division to kind try and keep some of the year even for everybody in the division. Everybody in one division plays, like the Bears division all plays the AFC North this year, right? So they're all playing the Steelers, the Bengals, the Browns, and the Ravens. All these teams were supposed to be good. So I had the Bears beating none of them. But I'm not so sure about that now. The Browns are 2-5. Bengals are probably a little better, 3-4, and the Ravens are 1-5. Who would have thunk that?
Well, who would have thought in the AFC South that Indianapolis would be 6-1?
Are they that good? I mean, I don't know.
Apparently, I mean, we have Daniel Jones as a resurgent.
Well, you got the Jaguars, who are a team that perennially don't have any place to play. They're 4-3. The Tennessee Titans are 1-6. Weren't they a playoff team a couple years ago?
Yep. Wow. They actually fired.
When you got the Broncos at 5-2.
They fired Mike Grable, who now is leading the New England Patriots to a 5-2 record.
Wow.
So.
Well, it's all about, you know, who you got coming in and coming back. I remember when Bill Parcells, and I remember reading this about coaches, and they were talking about some of the guys that are allegedly the best coaches. So the reason why they're the best coaches, well, not totally the reason, but is that they get to put themselves in the best situations. Now, did Parcells, did he leave the Giants, or was he fired? I can't believe
it. He left. He contract dispute.
Well, then he came back with the Jets. Now, the Jets were, I think they were 1-13 or some horrendous thing the year before. They had something like, it's a long time ago, but I remember I think they had like 10 guys on IR and had like, I don't know how many picks in the first two rounds the next year. To the point where, you know, Wile E. Coyote could have turned that team around. So Parcells gets that job and he turned them around pretty good, but he got the equivalent of like 14 guys. Back. He put himself in that situation where if you're just dying to get any head coaching job, that's the guy who gets the New Orleans job or the Bears job or somebody, you know, because you don't have any, you don't have a stock of draft picks, you don't have a stock of people, you just take it and hope you do better and you get noticed or something. But anyway, the Raiders are 2-5. The Bears beat them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they had those guys. The Chiefs 4-3, Chargers 4-3, Broncos 4-2. And over in the NFC, we have we got the Eagles at 5-2. They're still pretty good, even though they're probably not the juggernaut they were last year. Cowboys 3-3, Commanders 3-4, Giants 2-5.
Yeah, and also today, if you didn't hear, there was a Amazon's web service had a blackout. Or something went wrong, and a lot of sites went down for a bit. They say they're coming back up, but I heard that on WBBM and included people like McDonald's, Robin Hood. Supposedly their web service, what, AWS services, had a problem on the East Coast this morning.
Well, PTI is open for business, so
there we go.
The Buccaneers 5-1, Panthers 4-3, Falcons 3-3, and the lowly Saints. The Vikings are 3-3, the Packers 4-1. In the West, the 49ers are 5-2, and the Rams are 5-2. So that's Seahawks 4-2. So that's probably the best division. I don't think the Bears play any of those guys, but
no. But we do have a game 7 tonight.
We have a and that's somehow I like both of these teams. I really like that catcher in Seattle, for God's sake, boy. And but I would say that part of me wants Toronto to win just to see the reaction. But yeah, you know, we'll see about that. It'll be a good game. It's in.
Now, I do have a question. Will they ban Canadian citizens from coming in to watching the games in the United States?
I don't know. It depends on if they piss them off. You know, you never know. Those guys are bad. How hard is it to go to Canada these days?
It's not hard, but you need a passport. I mean, it used to be that you only needed a driver's license.
Well, you've needed the...
Since 9/11, yeah.
Yeah, you've needed the... if you drive in, you need the passport card. If you fly in, you need the passport. I never could understand that. But that's the drill. And then in the market, market's up... S&P's up 19, NASDAQ futures up 94. Gold bouncing back a little bit today. We took a big hit on Friday. So we've got kind of a... on one day, we look at the valuations and we go down. The next day, the buy the dippers are in. So it's kind of a battle between some people thinking the markets are too high, and then we the buy the dippers are all over the place. I mean, if anything's down, it comes right back up. Individual stocks, I got Tesla up 470. Yes, Tesla's up, and I have no idea on this one as to why. Not making any sort of a... Where were we? In March, April 8th, Tesla was $221. It is doubled since then.
Well, earnings come out, and I guess the CPI, of course, is delayed because of the shutdown.
The CPI is down. The monthly Treasury statement did come out. I don't think we want to tell anybody what the CPI is, because the tariffs are working their way through. Everything you hear about, especially in the auto industry, is tariffs are coming, are killing people. We're starting to. And we still have how many people in the country thinking that the Chinese are paying the tariffs? I wish, you know, somehow the education level here is not so good, but that's just the sort of the way that is. But this week, so the CPI is not coming out, the labor stuff's not coming out, the IRS is working, the Treasury statement, that came out, so some stuff is happening. So we got that going for us. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see tonight. I'm kind of stunned. Well, I'm not stunned, I guess, because of TV. But today would be game 7. All right, so it's Monday night. But if it would have ended last night, or even would have ended last Friday, in the middle of October, World Series does not start till Friday night, right?
That is correct.
I mean, what's with these people? You would think that this late in the year, you would start 2 days after whenever you could. Whenever the last team clinched. But we're just a studio audience. Why? You think people would go to these games? By the way, yesterday, you guys, we were going back and forth a little bit, kidding back and forth on our tech stuff. How difficult yesterday? There had to be, you know, I don't know this for sure. I'm going to say there had to be all kinds of people at the last minute did not want to go to that Bear game with the weather forecast. How difficult is it to get a ticket from somebody? You guys were saying on SeatGeek and stuff, they were still $300. There had to be all kinds of people who said, here, just take it. How do you even do that?
Email. You got to, if it's like everything else, it's through, you know, it's through your phone.
But I'm saying
there's no physical ticket.
But I mean, you couldn't just go there. I mean, there's nothing to, you can't just say, here, take my 4 tickets, see if you can sell them at the gate. That can't happen, right?
No. you would have to have it's all done through email, and I don't know, maybe SeatGeek also has the, you know, NFL contract. You have to, I know in baseball you can forward your tickets, but you have to forward it to someone's email.
But you have to either know the person. If I had four to the Bear game and I had four people and you had four and some reason, you know, everybody couldn't go, there's no way I can bring your ticket. You're not going to give me your phone number to give to some stranger at the park.
No.
So it really, I mean, whatever. I don't have them. I know I shouldn't even be complaining about it, but I just wonder why, when you're supposed to be having a customer-based business. These guys are so far beyond it. I don't think they even care, do they?
Why? I'm pretty much a monopoly. There's only 32 teams. I can pretty much do what I want. I'm still wondering about all these games in Europe now. I mean, we have one now in Madrid.
Yeah, that's next week in Madrid, right?
Madrid or Berlin. And, you know, we're doing one now, you know, two in London and then one in, looks like now Ireland is a big place. So, you know, we'll see.
Now, this is all those games on Sunday morning, they're not on regular TV, right?
No, they're on the NFL ticket. Or if you have the NFL network, you get them there as well. But if you have the NFL ticket, which is through Google, yeah, you get it. But no, it is not on regular TV. It isn't on Fox, CBS, or NBC.
It is kind of interesting. Not that, they make enough money, they sure don't care about what I think, but as you watch these teams, these leagues, all trying to maximize the amount of money, it seems like they're somewhat confused, aren't they? The NFL's still on, I'll use the term, free TV to a large extent. They seem to think that maximizes their revenue. They get big ratings, they get all kinds of commercials, they're evidently, the Super Bowl's already sold out. Yet other sports are absolutely convinced the cable model's the right one. And the NFL seems every year to try and go the other way. I mean, when was the first time they tried the the Thursday night stuff on the NFL network? Like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And then they pulled it off and put it on regular TV, and they sold it to somebody else. Now it's kind of back on Prime. But it seems like they keep going there, and they keep coming back. And, I mean, I'd love to see the numbers on all this. And I wonder what the difference is if you advertise on the, like, say, the Sunday afternoon national game or the Sunday night game on free TV. What's the difference in your advertising is between that and the Thursday night game? And does Amazon feel, or whoever it is, that they make up that difference? I bet it's got to be like half, Jimmy. I don't know. What would you guess the Thursday night game is versus a Monday or Sunday? When one is on free TV, well, Monday's ESPN, but then again, everybody.
That's a good question. I don't know, but I do know that Goodell thinks that he now can break the contract and renegotiate their media contract. You know, the TV contract, I guess, doesn't expire until 2027, and he's wanting to break it at the end of next year because he thinks they can get way more money because they're talking streaming, they're talking this. They do have the best ratings out of any sport. I mean, they have the smallest.
They got less games.
Yeah, they have the less games. I mean, when you're talking NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, you're talking over 80 games. You know, 80 to over 100 games. So it's a different animal, and the NFL is only 18 weeks.
Soon to be 19.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to see some of the numbers now they're figuring out, because I know they're just as anxious to get their next dime as their first dime. That part appears to be true, but it's just a marketing curiosity for me is all. It's not that I'm if Thursday night. I don't think it's as big a night as Sunday anyway, but say if it was, if it turns out your advertising is half as expensive somehow you have to make all that money up on something. And if in the do you make that all up on the subscriptions? Maybe you do. I don't know.
Well, I do know with the ones on Prime, Prime will have their own ads that you have a QR code. If you want to buy stuff, you can hit the QR code off your TV and it'll take you right to the Amazon site and you can make a purchase.
Well, but if somebody, you'll hear people say that, but it's...
How much money you get from that, I have no
what
idea.
What I'm saying is, when you say you use your own ads, what you're really saying is you're buying the ad. So instead of selling it to somebody on Monday night or Sunday night for $100,000, if you just keep it for like a show you're putting on, you just bought your own commercial for $100,000. I mean, and was it worth it or not is the question. I mean, that's a
good question. I just know that sometimes they have ads. Sometimes it's not even an ad; it just pops up on your screen.
Well, in the Super Bowl, how often, or even on Sunday night or whatever, they'll have 15 ads for the TV shows that are starting that week. Now, is it worth it? Maybe it is for those guys to essentially buy an ad, assuming they're saleable, to buy an ad for NCIS or something. Does that mean that many more people are going to go watch NCIS that whatever night it is, Monday or Tuesday, and does that mean the advertisement for NCIS goes up? I mean, these guys have the numbers. I just wonder how it all ties together. I find it hard to believe that if you can really sell it to Budweiser or someplace for real money, I don't know that it is worth it enough for you to one of your other shows. But then again, it's funny. It seems like we skip around topics all over the place. But really, it's sort of the same topic. I mean, what are these? What is the difference? How much does a monopoly make versus other people? Monopoly in football is the same as the monopoly you see in, all parts of the rest of the country and a lot of other stuff. And you wonder, there's not much difference between the football monopoly and the drug monopoly or cartel, is there?
Probably not.
I mean, cartel is a cartel.
Probably the difference is that they don't publicly tell anybody how much they make. I mean, the NFL, we signed a $7 billion TV deal. They don't say anything like that.
The deal is. You don't know how much it parcels down to individual. You don't know what individual teams make, although you can make a guess.
Right.
But what you do know is that the value of the team or where they are trading, I won't say value, or where they appear to be trading or people's estimate of where they would trade seems far in excess of what you would expect what the teams are making today. Now, what that means is their view of the future is quite bright, which, I hope they're right. But you wonder, take the Bears, for instance. So everybody, because they sold the one little piece of it, essentially from one partner to the other, they had the Bears valued at $8 billion. Well, okay, you can sell 25 shares at a value of that, but that's a little different than actually writing a check for $8 billion. If the Bears make, what was the estimate, $200 million?
Something around there, yeah.
Okay, well, That's like a real lot to pay for something that makes $200 million. I mean, if you're paying 6% interest, the interest check's $480. So if you're only making $200, it looks to me like you're in a hole. Well, they must think that in the year, 2035, ticket prices are going to be $800 or something, and we could inflate up, and if they could get their property taxes froze and all these other things, that somehow or another they're going to be in even greater situation 10 years from now. But that may not happen. I mean, there have been times, even though people think there haven't been, there have been times where we've had big lulls. The Soriano situation with the Cubs. What, do you have a 6 or 8 year contract, Jimmy? And by the end of his term,
yeah,
he actually played pretty well for the Cubs. Huh? But the Major League Baseball, the economy was in somewhat of a swoon during that 6 or 8 period of time, and all of a sudden at the end of his 8 years they're going, what are you paying this guy that much for? Well, I'm sure when the Cubs signed him they thought 8 years from now that would be chump change, but they picked the wrong 8 years. Now to these guys today thinking 8 years from now the world's going to be a box of roses, and we all hope, I think they're right, but they may not be. The the coach at Indiana that you just gave $8 million a year to, you may find out that 8 years from now the ticket prices in Indiana and the TV is less. Now that's nothing that we've seen in the last 15 years or 20 years, but it has happened. S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 89. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks, probably Mr. John Flanagan with us. And Nancy later.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Ricky on the board, Jim Lawler in studio, with Mr. John Flanagan on the line, with Nancy Long Graham in a little bit. We have S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 87. We're up a little more last night, but we are still up. It's a big earnings week, earnings week. Now Trump had a tense meeting with Zelensky. Now he calls for Ukraine to be carved up. This is 2 weeks after he said he thought they could win. I'm having a very hard time keeping track here. I don't
carved think. Up or just given over?
Well, same thing. It depends on who, whatever what the thing is. It's hard to keep. Dow futures up 70. It's the individual stocks in the Dow. American Express, for some reason, been doing exceptionally well lately. They're up another 63 cents. We've got Apple up 329. IBM up 172. IBM has been a quiet horse this year. Salesforce up 123, so nobody's really down all that much. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 266, 1.1. Defense stocks lead gains. I don't know, is that good, Jimmy, or not? I don't know. I guess it's good if you got a defense stock.
Wow.
FTSE up 34.4%, CAC around down 11.1. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei unchanged. Wow. The LDP to set new coalition deal. Hang Seng up 611. It's 2.4%. That's huge. Shanghai up 24.3%. So Asian stocks are to the moon, except for the Nikkei, which shows unchanged. I find that hard to believe. Bonds up 1 base point, 2.59. Japan up 5 base points, 1.67. Who would have thought that the Japan, which was at zero or low for so long, would be close to us now? It's only a point apart, Japan versus our 10-year. That's interesting. Oil down 49 cents, 57.05. In Indiana, I managed to get gas for $2.69. And knock one little small piece off the bottom of the bucket list, which I'll tell you in a second, Jimmy. Brent down 46 cents, 60.83. We've got gold, which had a big down move on Friday. It's up 64 bucks today, 42.77. Taking aim at that 4,300 number again. Silver up 58 cents. That's 1.2%. 50.65. That's huge on silver. Foreign exchange, 116.5 on the euro. And 134 even on the pound, so kind of in the middle of the range lately. And we have crypto up 1,700 to 110.778. Yeah. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 41 degrees right now with a high of 65. Sunny and breezy today. Tonight will be a touch of rain, otherwise clear with a low of 50 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 63 degrees right now with a high of 91. Bright sunshine, and tonight will be clear with a low of 62. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 13 minutes. Kennedy from Monroe's. Edens from Lane Cook, 29 minutes. We're looking at 21 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf. Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 22 minutes. Yesterday, the Blue Jays beat Mariners 6-2, tying the series 3-3. Game 7 is today at 7:08 p.m. in Toronto. For the NFL, yesterday, the Bears beat Saints 26-14. Thank God. And Cardinals lose to Packers 23-27. Today we got Buccaneers at Lions at 6 p.m. and Texans at Seahawks at 9 p.m. Back to you guys.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
Yes, we do.
You do. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, John. We could have used you apple picking on Saturday.
Oh, well, it turned out to be a great day for it. It was so hot in the morning. But...
Yeah, well, in the afternoon it was okay. But so we get down to Jimmy had a chance to come with, but he bailed. You know, I even thought I'd take him a ride down there, but he's If you're not into it, you sort of. My brother does.
And I do have a question. How would I get back?
We'd have got you back. Any worker, we get back. Anyway, so we go to this place in Indiana, right off the Michigan City exit, and he's got to get all the different rows of all these different kinds of apples, and they're delicious. I mean, he's got red delicious, yellow delicious, Romas, Galas. There's got to be 15 different kinds or 20. My brother does a huge apple pressing deal once a year. Guys from the soil. It's about a 10-man operation. By the time you cut them and shred them, and then you guys a big, huge press my nephew made, it's a big deal. It takes like 500 pounds of apples to get you about 40 gallons worth of stuff. I mean, it's a lot. Anyway, so we get down there, and I'm down there first, and it was supposed to rain later, so I figured I better get out there and pick some apples. So I was supposed to have a couple of assistants, Jen, my two nephews, two daughters, one's 8 and one's 3. Well, that didn't work out so hot. I had no assistant. The little one saw a bee and she headed back to the car, so she was kind of useless. Anyway, so my brother gets 503 pounds of apples, and the guy goes, that's okay, I'll only charge you for 500. I'm thinking, there's a bargain. There's a bargain. What the hell? I should have told him that I ate one when I was out there. I should have said, oh, by the way, charge me for one more, but I didn't. So, on the way back, I stopped and get some gas in Indiana at 269. And you know what, John? I've always had the phenomenon. I don't know if you're probably somewhat aware of this, but we've been going down there for years. I don't know what the connection is between Indiana gas stations and chicken. Now somebody will say, what in the hell is he talking about? Virtually every gas station in Indiana sells fried chicken or some form of chicken. Now people in Ohio have no idea what they're talking about. I don't see that in Illinois anywhere either, do you?
No.
So I pull into the gas station. I didn't really have anything to eat. Then I picked a couple hundred pounds of apples. I was pretty busy. But they must have been a good year, John. There were so many apples. They were all about chest or neck height. I just started picking and kept going for about an hour, and I had like 200 pounds. It was like I just kept filling up the cart, filled it up twice. I mean, there was nobody around. I just kept picking. And, it was easy to do. I didn't have to reach, and it was fine. Anyway, so I pull in to get some gas, and I go, you know what? I'm gonna take a little bit off the bucket list. I actually bought a little trough of boneless chicken wings to munch on the way home. So now I can always say that I bought, all the years I've driven by these places with chicken, I've never bought any. It's the first time. Now, how's that for a wacky thing on the bucket? You know what? They were really good. It was like $5 for 10 little pieces of what they claim wings. I don't think they were wings, but they were pretty good. So there you go. So if you ever stop in and want to grab a little thing of boneless wings, they're not bad.
Well, Illinois gas stations offer pizza in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not chicken, but...
But even the ones like right in Portage gas station, fried chicken, something. I don't get the connection. I honestly don't. But somehow or another, they all smell. You walk in, the first thing you do is smell chicken.
It's $2.69 a gallon, huh?
Oh yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was good.
At the Speedway, and then of course you go to the men's room, and then there's two shower stalls, right? Because if you're a truck, you go in there and shower up. Well, I guess you don't have to be a trucker. I guess you can just go in and shower up if you want. It's kind of a phenomenon you don't see here too often, but...
They do that at the public library in Chicago.
Oh, God. That would be... I think they have them in San Francisco, or those you got to pay for the toilets in the street, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. But what do you make of the world here? We've got... First Ukraine was going to win. Now we're carving them up. That was 3 weeks. I think this stuff changes fast enough, Jen, or what?
I didn't buy the story about Ukraine going to win. You know, I thought it was carving it up, or into how many pieces or one piece. I thought that was always a likely outcome. So I didn't really think that was ever going to happen, that they were going to beat Russia. So I'm not sure what the point of that, the diversion was.
Well, I think it has to do with who's draining the most too much. I mean, hell, it was a year ago Lou was talking about the Russian train system. It's falling apart because they can't get roller bearings, they can't get this, they can't get repair parts for the locomotives, and well, can't be any better now. I mean, it was then. How much are they willing to to drain people and money? I mean, they don't have any money. I mean, what if we had to fight a 3-year war? Where do we get the cash?
Maybe the theft of the jewels at the Louvre in Paris will finance some of it. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I was watching a film of it. The
4 minutes in and out.
Yeah, the guys looked like they were. They looked like they were construction workers. They showed up with the they used like power ladder or something, didn't they?
Yeah, and the museum was open. It was operating.
Was that ladder? Did they bring that, or was that there for some construction group?
I think it was there because there was construction going on.
So they just said, show up.
That was already scoped out ahead of time, too. It had to have been. So they knew they could be walking around with that stuff and not raise an eyebrows.
Reminds me of back in the day when you used to put your hard hat on and go buy booze when you were 18.
Yeah. It worked.
By the way, how come we weren't down south yesterday for the unveiling of George Went Way?
Oh.
I'm surprised we didn't get the heads up by our buddy Doc, actually.
Yeah.
And I saw, I didn't see him on TV, but I saw Paulie Went. I know Paulie real well. It's George's younger brother and the older sister. I didn't see Marty, Doc's wife. But they had, like 1,000 people there or something?
Yeah, it was a sizable crowd.
And, for those that don't know, the Wentz have been they never left Beverly. They still have the same house that George grew up with. Was George the oldest of 10 or 9? Big family.
A huge family, yeah.
They all went to Christ the King, and the mom, I knew real well, she'd go to church every day, always sat in the same seat, back row in the middle, so she was like an options trader, always in the same spot every day, right? And when at her funeral, all the grandkids took roses from the top and put them in her seat in the back pew. And they were real tight with St. Ignatius. Matter of fact, the head of St. Ignatius did her funeral, and very much into the Jesuits, and a lot of the kids went there and went on to Boston College and places. And George is a very, very well known, and I still like his story about the Notre Dame tickets. I'm going to tell you this, where he was the old man, also named George, had Notre Dame tickets like in the 50s, back when they couldn't sell out, right? So back when like the customer was. He was doing you a favor. Well, we don't think of that anymore, right? So, the bill keeps coming to the house. The old man pays it. The old man dies. So George starts paying for the tickets. And 20 years later, they figure out the old man must be dead, right? And now they went, oh no, you can't just keep buying these, even though you've had them for 50 years. You got to pay. So they wanted $1,000 a year per ticket to keep being able to buy them, and if you didn't, they'll hold it at $1,000 because they must have been really good seats. They'll hold it at $1,000 if you pay if you want to keep the price at $1,000. So one of our buddies sent him a check for $40,000 to keep the tickets. I'm like, really? To me, that's a little rich, Jen. But
that's for the license fee, right? The privilege of buying.
Well, they were. I don't know if they exactly called it that, but they said, basically, you've been screwing us on by buying these tickets. You've been screwing us for buying our stuff for like the last 15 years. So we know like the guy's dead, so now you want to keep him? It's $1,000 a year, type of thing. So that's where they went, and. I don't know if they still have or not, but what about the game Friday night? Everybody was assuming it was going to be a lightning event. Whenever they have these, I guess there were lightning stoppages of NCAA games all across the country, weren't there, Saturday? Yeah. Well, the weather was miserable at South Bend. I was driving back from Michigan City with the Apples for about 20 miles. John, I know in my lifetime I've driven a lot. Let's put it this way. I've never driven through harder rain. It was like, good Lord. And you don't know, everybody's still going 60 miles an hour in 94. You're thinking, hope somebody doesn't hit any standing water and spin around and somebody whack into them or something. But fortunately, we all made it. But it was just unreal. I mean, if there were a place to stop, people would have stopped, but there isn't really. And all that weather was headed to South Bend, but actually, it didn't even rain the first half and rained the second half. But it was a pretty good game. Southern Cal, a lot of good games this weekend.
Yeah, I was out for a wedding that night, and yeah, the driving was pretty intense. I mean, I was not having a good time.
Oh, yeah, it rained all night, rained all morning yesterday. But the Bear game was, I don't think it rained, did it? It ended up being windy, but it wasn't, I don't think it was as miserable as people thought, although maybe not the best night. So what do you, we have this stoppage going on, and I don't know what, every time there's one of these stoppages, everybody just does nothing but point fingers at one side or the other, and then somewhere, somebody comes out of it, and they claim that this side was blamed for it, and, but then it's 6 months later, they do it all over again. See, this would be the 14th time. I challenge anybody to say whose fault it was the fourth time or the eighth time or the 11th time, would you? I mean, how does anybody even remember this stuff, if you wanted to?
Well, and it isn't as though it does anything about controlling future shutdowns as far as, oh, gee, we really got burned the last time we pulled this stuff, and we don't want to do that again. Neither side seems to be, you know, afraid of taking heat for it when the time arises. But this one is starting to look like it's very different from the others, because I don't see that either side sees any reason to bend right now. And that's, you know, I could think of a lot of reasons why, you know, one side or both should bend, but I don't think they see it that way. And supposedly the, you know, the No Kings March was going to be the defining event that would, you know, let them make, you know, help the Democrats make their statement and then get on with negotiations.
For, well, people have already people forgot that. It's a day. It was yesterday.
Yeah. No. Trump put out his video of him dumping brown stuff on him wearing a crown.
Oh.
Showing, yes, I am king.
Gun. Yeah, he's in the...
Well.
And, yeah. And J.D. Vance put out one of him in a crown with Nancy Pelosi kneeling to him.
Ah. Well, the only thing I would say that's somewhat different on this, and everybody's so on one side or the other that you're not going to change anybody's mind. I think if I was one of the Republican side, the idea of the House of Representatives not even being there, I think is somewhat of a bad look, John. I think they might regret that. Because the idea that everybody else is being laid off and Congress is getting paid, whether they are or they aren't, I have no idea, but to not even be there is, I'm not so sure that's a good look.
It's a very bad look.
I don't know whose idea is that. I mean, if you look there like you look, if you're there and you look like you're trying, even if you aren't, I mean, it's a better look, I think. But I don't think it makes it, you know, it's not going to make any difference. But so what? They're going to stay out forever or what?
Well, it doesn't look like anything's going to happen too soon, does it?
No, but I'm saying that the House is going to stay home forever. They're not even in session.
No,
I don't think I've ever. Is that a first? It has to be for one of these things. I don't know. It may not be.
But it makes it stand out to me, because I don't remember that being. I could be wrong about that. I think this is a different kind of animal, and I'm kind of, you know, I can't say I'm nervous about it or scared about it. I'm. So I don't think this is the sort of, you know, the thing you want to make into a habit, which it certainly has become now. And now it's looks like they're really pushing the envelope to see how long they can drag it out. For whatever reason, I'm not clear on at all.
Well,
that kind of gamesmanship is not a good idea.
Well, I'm not going to whoever first started it or didn't start it or whatever. Whether it was God knows who, Obama or Trump's first term or whoever, but Congress, in many, many people's minds, they almost, if we had the, what was it, the Enabling Act here, I'm not so sure the attitude of a lot of people, whether you think Trump's a dictator or a king or whatever, or just doing his job, whatever that all is, the fact is that Congress has been pushed way into the back burner. And anything that they do on their own, I don't know if the speaker is all for that or not or whatever. I can't read these people's minds. But the idea of Congress not even being there during somewhat of a time of crisis, are we trying to tell people that they're useless or what? I mean, what is the message?
That's the impression I get. And I, you know, if they think they can handle that messaging and it's going to work for them in the future, I think they got another guess coming.
Why do you think
that's the kind of game playing here that I'm you know, kind of amazed by it, because there isn't a long, you know, long-term problem here that, or, you know, the solution that are kind of matching up. Everybody seems like we can wait this out indefinitely, and we can turn this into a public relations stunt if we take this approach. And here's how we can deflect the other side, you know, public relations stunt. And all of this is turning into, you know, something that has nothing to do with any of the, you know, issues on the table, it seems. But it's about how this can be portrayed and believed by people as a test case for the, you know, midterm elections, to see if this is something they can use to somebody's benefit. If so, I think that there's a kind of recklessness about it.
Well, if whatever individually or not, I mean, nobody's in anybody's mind, whether Trump thinks he's a king or not. He acts like a New York mafia boss. I won't say king, but he does. Everything is all, it's all about him. But the point is,
well, you know, and LBJ was like that too. It's not like that's unprecedented.
It's not to this level. Anyway, but be that as it may, for Congress to just stay at home for 3 months, or 6 months, or a year, I don't know what that tells you about Congress' view of themselves. I mean, I guess you know more about this than me. Could the Democrats in the House show up and say, we're here? I'm not saying they're smart enough to do that, but could they?
Well, and, you know, they have attempted to do something like that in the past, you know, staging, you know, sit-ins or sing-ins.
I mean, just come in and say, here we are. Yeah. Just come in and say, here we are. Yeah. We don't know why the Republicans aren't here. We think it's a horrible idea of the Speaker to have us not here. So guess what? We're here.
The House is kind of irrelevant, though, in this whole shutdown issue. I mean, they've done their work on this, so.
Well, they could.
They've got any unfinished business their own.
They're not done until it's done. I mean, until both houses Congress, you don't pass your side to the other side says no and say I did mine and leave for the next 3 years.
Yeah, but I mean they passed the continuing resolution.
I know, but I'm saying that needs to be appears to be revised somewhat for the thing to get, you know, and if there's any kind of a negotiation, can we meet in the middle here somewhere? You can't if they're not there. How do you do that? I mean, you can do it by Zoom. I get the part about we actually can talk to people these days without being in the same room, but still, the visual is. I'm surprised, as bad as I think some of the stuff the administration's doing, I'm surprised that the leadership in the Democratic Party, it seemed to me some of it is so easy to take advantage of. If I was that party, I'd just say, you know what, we're coming back to work. I don't know about you guys. We got stuff to do here. Because, I mean.
I think this is probably the most vivid example I've seen of, you know, what happens when you've got a political organization like the DNC that's rendered, you know, pretty much, you know, irrelevant. And it comes, you know, after a history of I think weak management and the party, you know, gradually splitting along ideological lines, and the DNC has kind of facilitated that split. It hasn't tried to mend it. And certainly, you know, the way it's structured now with people like Ken Martin, formerly David Hogg, it just reflected the same problems that the party couldn't seem to bridge, you know, on its own. And there's nothing beyond that to kind of pull everybody together and have, you know, people knocking heads saying, you know, this is bad for business next year. It's bad for business in this particular state. We got to wake up to that. Where you'd have, you know, figures in the party like Schumer and Jeffries who would listen to anybody in the DNC. But
why do you think
there hasn't been a DNC like that for many, many years?
Well, John, why do you think just in we'll say long term history here, and I've done some reading on this, it doesn't make me an expert at all, is the way the parties are sort of funded. Now, this has all gotten kind of weird because a lot of rich people back some people in the Democratic Party now too, but then sort of, and the Republican Party was the party of, you know, fiscal conservatism, I'll say that at least. I mean, in terms of other stuff, you know, different people went back and forth, but they were always kind of fiscally conservative. Let's keep the taxes down a little bit, considered to be a little bit more beneficial to big business, although it came and went. I mean, it comes and goes, but the I've read for a period of, you know, 30 years, the Republican Party was a little more of a, I use the term, a party, where more people would give money to the Republican National Committee. Because if you were like a business and you wanted, you know, low capital, there were some things that there you could always sort of count on them to be for, you know, be it lower tax or whatever. So they had people that could give money to the Republican National Committee, and you sort of knew where it was going. Not all the time, but, you know, you sort of knew where it was going. And I've read it on the Democratic side, that's really like never been the case. That's why the Republican Committee always had better computers, better software, better research, because they had an income stream where the Democratic group really didn't. And this is years ago, John, a group of us worked for Nancy Drew Sheehan to become treasurer here, and I was on this little committee, and I learned quite a bit. But we actually did something, boy, nobody do this today. We actually put together a pretty heavy pamphlet about what she was going to do in that office, explaining the office to people, because nobody knew. What the hell does a treasurer do? How would you even know unless somebody told you? Well, it was probably 40 pages. 8 or 9 of it was on financing and how you invest the money, and I wrote that one. I mean, it was easy to write. You know, the only place you could put money was in federal paper. You could either buy 90-day or 2 years or 10 years or whatever. So it really wasn't too hard to write, was it? It didn't strain the brain too much. But we dropped this off at all the newspapers and stuff, and they go, we've never seen anything like this. This is terrific. Well, she ended up, she was ahead, allegedly, as well as you could tell. This is when Donna Clark Netch was running for governor. Well, she gets clobbered by Edgar. It was Edgar, right? Well, Nancy was winning, supposedly. She was running against the lady that ended up winning a couple times. That was her name. Blonde lady. She became comptroller and then treasurer. She just died. Judy Bart Topinka, right?
Yep.
So she's running against her. Now, the last weekend, they thought she was in, right? So they asked her to cough up $20,000 of the money that she had raised and not campaign the last weekend. They thought she was in easy and give it to the people that were not in easy at all. Matter of fact, were out. So she does and doesn't campaign the last weekend. In other words, the Republicans, I think if you run there and you do well in the primaries, they are a source of income to you. The Democratic side, like when Obama ran, and he was very popular when he ran, all of a sudden they're getting all this money. I think he's ponying up money back to the party. You don't get the same sort of contributions to the individual people are actually, if you're doing well like Nancy was, everybody liked her. Well, she ended up losing by, like, I don't know, couple thousand votes or something, which he probably maybe could have, if she'd have campaigned the last weekend and had a few more commercials, she might have got in. But she didn't. And it was a Republican sweep, which I think maybe she was okay with that because she maybe didn't want to be the only person there. But anyway, there has always been this kind of difference between the two committees. The Democratic one was never all that strong as a committee, I don't think.
Well, even going back to the New Deal, I mean, Will Rogers famously said that he's not a member of any organized political party. He's a Democrat. Back then, the party had a lot of fractures. And, it was a, you know, cobbled together coalition, really, that, you know, everybody got behind Roosevelt, but that was not, had not been the case, you know, for a long time. And really, ever since, I'd say Watergate or, you know, the 68 election, the Democrats, too, were, you know, always kind of at loggerheads with themselves. You know, they have walkouts at conventions, they have credentials fights, and, you know, public airing of differences they have that, you know, made it very difficult for them to conduct business as a unified organization. It didn't care, it looked completely disorganized. And, you know, Obama, you know, swept in and then depleted its coffers, so they had no money. You know,
but I mean, I think they look for. I mean, Hillary ended up giving money.
She bailed them out.
Yeah, she bailed them out,
and that's how she was able to dictate, you know, how, you know, the primaries were run, and, you know, stealing the debate questions ahead of time and shutting out Sanders, and, you know, the fact that Sanders has anything to do with the Democrats.
Well, but because the money is different. I mean, I don't know which is right or wrong.
But you know, you remember in 2016 time they had this very public, you know, the selection process for the new DNC chair. And this was, you know, in the sort of the around the time of the election, or shortly after it, and there was like 15 candidates, and they were all, you know, it was like DEI on display, and they ended up with two co-chairs, and it was Tom Perez, who had been, I think, Secretary of Labor under Obama, and Keith Ellison, you know, who was, you know, Attorney General in Minnesota, two very different constituencies, and you know, they were supposed to, like, this is a unified party. You know, you can't even choose one leader for the DNC and make it look good.
Well, I don't think the Democrats... Back up a little, John. What's your opinion? I mean, I was reading some stuff on Quora this weekend, and, you know, one of the issues with governing America is it is so many different constituencies. And I think the Democratic Party has always kind of had a wider variety of constituencies maybe than the Republican Party. I mean, you have... You know, not that Republicans isn't wide, it is. I just think the Democrats might... I'm not so sure the unions ever totally got along with some of the other people back 40 years ago either. I mean, it was kind of hard to unify the place. I mean, that's why it's hard to govern here. I mean, it's a...
Well, and, yeah, and part of it, you know, goes back to Reconstruction, where, you know, the Democrats in the South were pro-slavery, anti-black, and... You know, the Democrats in the North were, you know, at one time too, also anti-black, and yet the party, you very much evolved, especially by the time of Franklin Roosevelt, where the blacks had swung over to the Democrats wholesale, pretty much in the 32 election, certainly the 36 election, and that, you know, didn't go down well with the Southern Democrats. So you had, you know, the Dixiecrats split off, and, you know, with Strom Thurmond in 1948, and wrangling for the Civil Rights Platform, and then the Civil Rights Act under LBJ, that the Democrats had a tougher job to accommodate people that they had kind of inherited because of geographic, you know, racial differences that were very hard to bridge. The Republicans never had anything quite that pronounced, where they had to accommodate people or give, you know, orders to shut up and go get along to go along. And that kind of, you know, helped the Republicans kind of as a, you know, a messaging unit, where it was able to, you know, kind of overlook the kind of differences the Democrats couldn't overlook. And that's just gotten worse for the Democrats.
Well, I mean, when it comes down to, if they get a...
They're less adept at managing those differences now than they ever
were. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what we have right now, but to me, the parties on both sides, I mean, you know, I get accused of not being in the middle, but I am. I don't know. When I say in the middle, in terms of the various policies, I mean, I'm never going to, well, whatever. I'm never going to like what this particular president is doing, but I can see, when I say in the middle, I look at this, the healthcare situation. And now, on the one side, we have a group that seems to want to continue to fund stuff that appears to be way too expensive. Okay, and on the other side, you've got a group that wants to just cut back on the funding and really doesn't give a crap if people die, you know, which, you know, we'll let them get some places or whatever and tell lies to everybody. Now, the answer, obviously, is that medical care in this country is way too expensive. And yet neither side appears to be willing to take on that massive problem. So in terms of governance, neither side is a, quote, solution, in my opinion. You can say we'll cut this group of people out. We just won't pay them, or we'll cut this group of people out. That's, I guess, a short-term solution, but that's not America. If somebody shows up with a cut, you're gonna sew it up somehow. But that's not. Now the question is, why the sewing up the cut cost $10,000 in emergency room when the guy doing it takes him a half hour and he's making, you know, all the rice he can eat? I mean, why does that cost that much? I mean, that. Therein lies the issue. And I've always thought that for years and years and decades that, you know, the Republicans wanted to lower taxes for all, you know, their buddies. And that's not a bad thing to say, because when you're in office, you like to do stuff for your group, right? So they want to lower taxes for their people, and were never really able politically or had the stones to cut the expenses down to where that worked out. Now, the Democrats on the other side seem to want to fund all this stuff, and oh, by the way, don't have the stones to raise the taxes up to the number where you need to fund it all. I'm not saying I like one side or the other. I'm just saying both sides needs a calculator, right? I mean, because it's a problem. Now we seem to have somebody who, because of I won't say the total stupidity, but we have a population now that people who are so believing in some guy who lies all the time, they think that these tariffs are not a tax. Well, I tell you what, in that regard, I think Trump is a genius for actually putting this one over on his people. I mean, I've talked to people that are full Trumpers, and they go, yeah, well, we're not going to have a problem with this budget deficit once these tariffs tick in. And I go, what are you talking about? Well, all those people, all the Chinese will be paying all this stuff. And I go, it's not the Chinese, it's you. No, it's not. It's the Chinese. That's what he says. First of all, I'm not so sure he exactly said that, but that surely is what people believe. And you know what? How do you have... I mean, the House is not even at work, John, and yet somehow or another, whether the Democrats are intimidated or whatever, I don't know. That is the single biggest tax increase in the history of this country, and all revenue bills are supposed to start in the House, and yet it didn't. How is it that I'm the only person? I don't think I'm the only person. What are we doing here? I mean, and everybody thinks it's okay. Maybe the Enabling Act is coming, where Congress votes himself out of existence.
Well, if people insist on calling it a tax, it's not a tax like your real estate taxes. It isn't like you could just, find some other taxing entity or some, non-taxing entity, that covers real estate and substitute it, which is possible with a tariff. You're not obligated to buy the thing with
a
tariff.
No, Jen, it's a tax. It's a sales tax at the border.
But it's a tax you can avoid.
How can you avoid?
You don't just buy that product.
Oh, okay. Well, but that's... How's that working out?
Well, I think it's working out as well as it ever would. I mean, the idea of it is to control consumption.
No, it's not. The idea is a tax. Yeah, it's a tax. It's all it is. Whatever. I mean, I have no idea. And by the way, if you put...
Well, it's to discourage, purchasing activity in one particular commodity, one particular product, one particular manufacturer. So,
the $660 billion they expect to raise is a direct offset to the tax decreases they gave people that have money. It's a direct offset. Once you roll your taxes one place and you raise them somewhere else. I mean, the numbers are right there.
Yeah, this is not the situations we're in with this. The shutdown, though, this is different.
Well, I'm saying it's all. I mean, our theme here is what exactly is Congress doing, and are they essentially telling people they don't even need to be here by not being here? And I don't know what that message is. Because clearly that is the message that's getting through to people. And what do we need a Congress for? Having this big debate, and they're not even at work. And, oh, by the way, they're getting paid. I mean, how can you screw yourself over as a congressman any worse?
It's a game of chicken, and like you were saying, I don't think you can point to particular winners and losers in the past that it was convincing enough to discourage future Congresses from doing. So it isn't like this is nobody's ever really taken a long term hit for the reputation or for the party or even for any individual. But this one is turning into something where they want that kind of confrontation, clearly.
Well, I'll ask you.
They want this to have lasting impact.
Well, we're having a debate here about. I think we're agreeing on. Is it? I think it's just people's. After 13, 14 times, how does anybody have a collective memory of it? I mean, the record one, and there's been a bunch of these, so I'm not just blaming. The record one was in Trump's first term. Was what, 34 days or something?
Yeah,
29 days, somewhere in there. Does anybody even remember what happened? Who was, the winner or loser, or who was blamed? I don't.
Well, you can see in the commentary, people have trouble even affixing you know, a particular year to whichever shutdown.
Yeah.
It isn't like this makes any kind of an impact like other things. I mean, there's lots of other things that you would think might be less consequential that people can fix in their memory. They know when this happened. They know the result of that event. But the shutdowns have never had that kind of contaminating...
Well, because there's so many of them.
Yeah, and they also don't seem ever to involve, you know, any sort of risk that was, you know, either not worth it or worth it. It isn't like it had any kind of discouraging effect on future shutdowns. Nobody was terrified to do this again.
Well, I think
in fact, they're emboldened to do it.
If I had to put a vote in here, a vote out of nowhere, I'm going to say, John, every single one of them, even you and I, the Bickersons, would say that every single one, if we were to go back 6 weeks after it ended, we would be able to say which side was, quote, blamed more for this one. Because at every single time, I think one party managed to screw up a little more than the other one. And there was, quote, if you would have hit 60% of the population might have said, ah, the Democrats screwed up on this one, or the Republican. All I'm saying is, my only comment is, 6 months later and two shutdowns later, nobody even remembers it.
Right.
But at the time, I think somebody kind of was blamed. But like I said, what difference does it make? It's like who made the error in the 48 World Series? Who knows?
Yeah, it's multi, you know, the typical way a lot of, you know, fights, you know, develop and then they proceed and then at the end everybody forgets that there was ever a dispute at all. And,
yeah,
you know, there aren't any real hard feelings about it. But that's back at the time when even in Trump's first term, I think there was more comedy between the parties and willingness to kind of, you know, get along when all the dust settled. And there might have been a lot of, you know, scrambling and shouting and yelling, but it didn't have, there were nothing like the divisions we have now. And you didn't have the Democrats in such total disarray as they are now. And I think that's something that has, you know, turned this into kind of a...
I think that, to be honest with you, the non-Trump Republican Party is in just as much disarray as, well, as the Democrats.
I don't want to excuse them either, because I think a lot of the, you know, unified front of the Republicans is purely cosmetic, and you know, they're waiting for Trump to get off the stage, and it's going to go back to, you know, business as usual. They can't wait for him to be gone. They'll use him and his supporters in the meantime, but there's no love lost between.
Well, there has to be a bunch of Republicans. Because, you know, to be quite honest, John, I think a lot of moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans think sort of like I do, that are not extreme on either side. That might be a little bit of a boast, I don't know, but there's got to be a few Republican congressmen sitting there going, let me get this straight. There's this huge tax increase that went through without us even knowing about it. And, oh, by the way, all this crap's happening in Washington and we're home. There's got to be people who think that's wrong.
And the problem is that Trump has proven that he's got long coattails, and Republicans have seen the wisdom and the practicality of getting aligned with him in the voters' eyes, because, you know, his endorsement or his, you know, friendship or whatever can help them. So they're certainly not going to refuse that kind of help, and they'll curry favor with him if it can benefit them. But this isn't like it's, you know, I don't know if it's going to necessarily transfer to a J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio, so you got that kind of division.
Well, out of the two, I sure hope it's Rubio. Me,
well,
but
I don't know. I'm putting money on Vance myself.
But. Well, it's hard to. We're not.
Look, quite. I'll grant you that the Republicans hardly are, you know, a shining example of what the party could be or should be. But look at the Democrats. I mean, you've got, you know, every blue city in the country, you know, badly run, spending its way into oblivion, and the party.
All right, so the solution for our Republican friends on the show, if we just had a Republican in Mayor Johnson's job, all would be okay.
None of the industries
that have gone. None of the people. We're not. I see so much difference between this world and the Clinton world, where Clinton people would say, gee, Clinton made people go back to work to get some of the welfare stuff. by the way, I think he did. I'm not, that's exactly true. I look around, John, the people now that are in trouble are so different than the people that were in trouble 30 years ago, between the drugs, the disease. This group is not going to go to work tomorrow just because you made them. It ain't happening. This is 30 years later of a permanent underclass. This is a serious, serious problem. It's not just those people don't want to work. I wish it was. But in Clinton's time, I think it kind of was. These cities have been dealt a really horrible deal. And I think this mayor is about as bad as we could get. Yet, give you and me the job tomorrow, I don't know, how long would it take to turn us around? Could we? How do we get business back here? I don't know what you do, John. I mean, this is how do you turn the education system around? Because the families, the people are not there.
Let's just grant that it's really bad to have a mayor in any big city who is not only a product of the teachers' union, but is still controlled by it.
You're never going to get me to defend him. I'm just saying.
You'll never fix anything, including the schools, with that kind of a city government.
But the idea is, if we just had a Republican there, all would be right. No, it's so ignorant, I can't go there.
Just the Republican time. It's like in Chicago, we haven't had, you know, a Republican mayor since 1931. That's 94 years ago. That doesn't mean that they haven't been Republican-like Democrat mayors.
Oh God, the Daleys were so Republican, it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, then, you know, Richard.
Besides, the calculator should work for both parties, shouldn't it?
Well, if you had any kind of, if either party, you know, made fiscal soundness, make some hard choices to fix the pension mess, for example, in Illinois and in Chicago, but there's absolutely no willingness in the Democrats, and the Republicans are a non-entity. It's not like anybody challenges them. There's no organization.
We've had nothing but Republican governors here for a long time. I mean, now we don't, but we did. We have a, but I mean, they couldn't fix the pension issue.
It's become almost unfixable.
No, it's not. You could have. The issue, and again, boy, you can't drop into this. Don't tell me I'm doing this to myself. You can't drop into the part, well, if people only voted, if people only did this. Well, simple fact is that the unions and the pension people have a serious vote. Okay, it's just like old people have a serious vote. I mean, duh, gay people have a serious vote if something is affecting them. But they're never 90% of the voting public. They're 20%. And when 30% show up, guess what? They win. I mean, I can do the math. You would think if it was important enough for the other 80% to show up, if what the 20% wanted was so egregious that you could easily override them. But somehow or another, no matter which side it is, we can't. I mean, I'm going to say this president has tremendous support, serious support in everything he does, no matter what he does, which is even scarier. Of 20% of the population, they all vote. That 20% is way more powerful than you would think 20% would be. Just like the unions used to be, or something, or ARP, the old people. They, God help you, if you try and mess with Social Security, and 20% of the population is over 65, and they all show up, because you can't count on the other people to show up, can you?
No. And then you get 100% of the media opposed to him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if it isn't the media, I would say that in this city, and we had a, for those that don't know, Janet, you can explain, how many years do we get to vote on having a constitutional convention? Is it every 20? In Illinois, something like that?
Yeah. Con-con?
No. Well, I mean, we haven't had a con-con since you and I were in high school. But
yeah.
But in this Constitution, I think there is a vote. Now, Jimmy, wouldn't mind looking at, is it 15 or 20 or 25 years? There's a vote that says, should we have another one? And in this Constitution, there's a line in there that says, John, you probably know it word for word. It says, nobody who has a pension can have his pension not deleted or... anyway, you can't cut his pension. That's not what the words are, but something along those lines. It was put in there originally, so...
What's this called?
Well, it's a line in the U.S. Well,
it's not impaired.
It's impaired, something like that. But it was put in there for somebody like the governor to not threaten a judge with his pension if he ruled the wrong way or something like that.
Right.
But in the meantime, now people have played games with this to the point where it's some of the egregiousness of some of the activity. Well, when the Constitution was going to come up again, I was on the show and I was all for it. Boy, the guys downstairs in the fire station were not happy with me. Well, you can't have this. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, all they're going to do is vote that line out. So, okay. So you had 15-20% at most, maybe, of the state is people that are public jobs or had public jobs or something. But they got totally rousted. And, you know, but, you know, the rest of the people might say, hey, look it. Do we really need a policeman getting paid a pension when he's 55, when we still need him? We maybe don't need him out in the streets if he doesn't feel he can do it anymore. I wouldn't wish that anybody who doesn't want to do it. But for God's sake, he can sure as hell work, and we can train him how to do forensics or something like that. Doesn't mean he's dead. I mean, you can retire all you want. You get your first paycheck at 55, 65. It's like everybody else. But that's not what we do here. That's not what they do in California. I mean, that's not what they do. California, the amount, how many people, Jan, we should have I'm going to say that the single biggest, people think the biggest, voting group in California are the teachers. I think it's the prison workers. Because they had that three and out, there were so many, they had so many prisons, and I think those guys and ladies, again, I'm kind of talking off the top of my head here, I think they're able to retire after 20 years. Right, so you get a job in a prison when you're 23, and at 43, you're out, and you're getting paid. Maybe it's 25 years. What Shanny used to tell us, and in Florida, he grew up in Florida, he goes, the people that had the dough, I mean, not buy Apple a $10 dough, but had dough from earning money, were guys that joined the Army at 18. In those days, you got your pension when you were, 38? Then they became a policeman, and retired at 58, so now they got two pensions, and now they're working or running a securities company. I mean, a security firm. He goes, those guys they have a job and they got two pensions. Those are the guys with the yachts. Well, you know, that's interesting. But how do you somebody work for 20 years and you pay him for 80 if he lives to be 100? For God's sake. I mean, the numbers just don't add up.
Have you been following what happened in Harvey, Illinois, last week?
God, do I want to know? Go ahead. Go.
On Thursday, the city voted to declare itself financially distressed under Illinois law, because you can't declare bankruptcy as a municipality in Illinois. This is the only route left to you. But they've been completely swamped by the amount of their revenue, which, goes towards funding pensions in the state. So they're asking to be, having the finance city turned over to the state to manage it, because they can't do it. Now, I mean, they're probably fairly confident that with Democrat, run state, they'll fare better under this than if it were configured somewhat differently. But I guess I was shocked but not surprised to read that Harvey has a 53% collection rate for their real estate taxes, which means that the 47% of the taxes are not collected.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me. But that shows exactly how the state is going to manage.
John, as an attorney, you should know the favorite line of all attorneys. It ain't the billing, it's the collecting. What do you think? Well, what do you suppose the collection rate is in Chicago Heights? Audrey was selling houses out there for, what did one go for, $90,000, and the taxes were like six? How the hell is somebody going to pay, if the house is worth 90, how the hell is somebody going to pay $6,000 in taxes? When you can't even.
The South Suburbs are, a particularly acute example of this. There's an article by Austin Burr, Illinois Policy wrote about this, and he mentions in the article about Harvey that Madison is in pretty much the same boat.
Well, Jan, how come, I mean, maybe you know more about the nuts and bolts than the way the state works, and again, I'm going to give the Cliff Notes version on this. The way the state works, I grew up in Evergreen Park. You know, well, I was back in the yards, but then Evergreen Park. Illinois has more municipalities than any other state in the union by far. I mean, by far. How many suburbs around Chicago? Like 100 or something? It's
and that doesn't even include the township taxing right. bodies.
Well, what I'm saying, what happens is, for instance, this Evergreen Park has a police department, not very big, or a fire department, and a school. Six schools, and including a high school. Now, that pension stuff that people pay in from the people of Evergreen Park goes into a pension fund, but the pension fund is run by the state. Every one of these, Oak Lawn, Evergreen Park, Park Forest, they don't have their own pension funds. They all pile into the state pension fund. So if your guy, your principal, you know, the tricks they used to do were, you know, he picks up, you know, 48 sick days his last year or something. So he actually makes more his last year than he's ever made. He used to make, what, John, 85% of that was your salary. So there was a lot of people who retired at more than they ever made instead of being 85%. So as I'm saying, these are the kind of tricks people do. What, if Mayor Daley came back to work one day after he was mayor and his pension went up 15 grand or something?
Yeah.
I mean, but my point here is all that stuff now goes to the state, and that's where that pension fund is. And the money then comes out of the state fund. However, the city of Chicago, and everybody in the state, that comes out of some of their taxes. Now, in Chicago, is big enough. I don't know about Rockford or a couple other cities that are pretty big, Jen, but I think Chicago might be the only place that has their own pension fund. So the city of Chicago, the police here, that's a Chicago police pension fund. But what nobody knows is they criticize the hell out of the city, which I'm not saying they shouldn't. The people in the city also pay for the people in the rest of the state. So when you pay your state taxes, I'm essentially, and you're essentially, paying for the teacher who's retired from Evergreen Park.
Right.
Where nobody in the rest of the state helps pay for the teacher who retires from the Chicago Public Schools. And yet no mayor here says, we're not doing this anymore. We're seceding from the state or something. I mean, you can't do that, but I'm saying we're not doing this. We're not paying. Yeah, we're having trouble paying our own people. We're sure as hell not going to pay for your people either as well, which they are. Why does nobody even mention that?
I think the state would be, appalled if the city tried to back out of that. That's going to leave them with a tremendous hole they can't fill.
Well, but so I mean, it ought to be a big hole.
But it's they've gotten used to having the hole filled, and they're not going to go along with any kind of plan to back out of that. So it's got no legs, outside of Chicago, and I don't think there's going to be any way to do that without just
Well, I mean, it's totally unjust the way it is.
Chicago would be better off seceding at that point.
But you know what's even weirder, John? If you knew this nuance. So I don't know which governor, it was before Pritzker, I don't think it was him, but somebody said the idea of giving your teacher who you love or your commissioner, all his sick days and giving him a bonus his last year. So let's say the guy makes 200 grand as a principal or whatever he makes, his pension should be, what, 170, 85%? Am I doing my math right?
Yeah.
If you give him a bunch of sick days and you give him a bonus or some other kind of thing his last year, or you let him coach football or something and make another 40 grand as an assistant coach or some crap people were doing, all of a sudden now the guy's pension is 250 or lady. So one of the governors said, well, we're not doing this anymore. And they actually went back to the municipalities, went back to Evergreen Park and say, we're paying this guy 20 grand a year or 40 grand a year more than he's owed. You guys got to make up the difference. And the weird part was, Jan, most of the villages said okay and did. How did they get... The people in that village couldn't possibly...
They paid that penalty for the excess forever until the person dies.
Yeah, and they'd said, okay, we will. I mean, does anybody in the village even know that? You would think people show up at the next meeting with pitchforks or something.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I think a lot of what we're talking
about...
It's
bad enough that there's automatic step increases in the pensions. Regardless, it has nothing to do with cost of living or anything else. You just automatically get it. That's bad enough. Then you throw these sweeteners in there to boost everybody's annuity, by throwing work at them. Maybe it's not really work at all, but it boosts their salary, so they get an inflated annuity out of it. And even when there's the penalty for exceeding the state limit, they did this in 2008, 2009. I remember they did it. There's still.
Yeah, they still pay it. We got to bring Nancy in, but remind me if I don't do it today. If we got more stuff to talk about with Nancy, my story about my neighbor from who worked like 4 years for Wisconsin or 5 years when he got out of school. The guy's, he's got to be 85 or something. But he was telling me that his pension, they were still contributing to it in Wisconsin, and he was going to end up making more in his pension than he ever made when he worked there.
Sure.
And he hasn't been there in 50 years.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, SP
nice
Futures up 20.
Get it,
well, like that idea. Yeah.
Well, it's great if it's you, but how is it? None of us are ever on this. We're always. What do the Irish say, John? The snipes are grousing. We're the snipes. we're grousing because it seems like it's going to everybody else and not us.
Well, yeah. Well, what can we say to that? I mean,
how'd you not know? You've been on the show 30 seconds. And I've accused you of being a snipe.
Well, that's fine. Absolutely.
So how are you on cloud nine? The Irish and the Bears both won?
I just can't believe it. I mean, let's face it, the Bears are winning, but it's an ugly win. But I don't even know if I care. I mean, it's just good to see them understand they can win. Well, I don't even know if they knew that before, but they can win. They get excited about winning. The defense is the best I've seen in a very long time.
It's playing
yesterday's
better.
Game. Much better. And then their passing game, is not very good, but the running game came back. So, I mean, that's a miracle.
Well, it's not really a miracle. They signed a couple offensive linemen that are decent.
Well, it was good. It was just, it was really good.
Watching that game, Nancy, man, I would hate to be a snipe here, which I guess I am. The Bears are playing better. How bad is New Orleans?
Well, they were only 1-4, so I wasn't expecting a lot. But when they started winning, I thought, oh my God, here we go again.
I mean, when they scored a 2-touch, the guys on TV are going, God, these guys don't know what they're doing. they've got screen passes, they've got this, nobody even knows what the play is. Because the guys are going, they're awful. And then when they scored the 1 touchdown, they go, where did that come from? they were so inept, and all of a sudden they had a really good drive right before the half. Where did that come from?
I thought I was just speechless. And then they came out like a whole different team in the second half.
Yeah, well, all right. So what's going on? What's going on in Nancy world? What's going on? I mean, 50 mortgages a day. You
50 mortgages a day. No, there's not 50 mortgages a day, Tim.
Well, who are you doing business with? I mean, I see a lot of the closings Audie's had of late. Nobody's even getting a mortgage.
Yes, they've been paying cash. That's correct.
John, we mentioned it last week, and Nancy wasn't here. Was it 50% of all closings in the last 6 months were cash? Is it that high? Was it 53%? It was some huge number. Could that even be possible?
That's an important statistic.
I think it's important.
Yeah, what is it? What's the normal number, Nance? Is there such a thing as a normal number?
I don't think there's such a thing as a normal number, but I mean, 53% is a huge number for the average home price being what? $300,000,
$400,000?
$412,000? That doesn't mean the homes are affordable. It just means they're affordable to a narrow slice of the population.
Correct. I agree with what John just said. I mean, it just makes total sense that people are, the people who had money were holding, and now it's kind of changed around where it's not a seller's market so much anymore. It's going more towards buyers, and that's a big, 53% is a big number for people just paying cash. Come on. I mean, who has $400,000 just sitting around?
Well, it's people who bought homes 30 years ago. that are now upsizing or downsizing and just trading houses. Right? That's what's happening.
I think it's more than that. I think it's more than that. I think it's the, you know, believe it or not, I believe it's the foreigners are coming in. The affluent are coming in, like from India. A lot of people from India are coming in. I'm not talking about migrants or anything. I'm just saying, I just think these people have money.
Well, I hope they do. I mean, I just, when you see somebody selling their house for, you know, $550 or something, and you love to see it, but it's, you know, it's a, I'll say a regular family, might even be blue collar. It's people that, but there's no way in their lifetime would they ever afford to pay that for a house. I mean, I'm glad they have it, you know, but it's not like they made $100,000 a year for 40 years and saved 40 of it. I mean, that's not what's happening.
That is exactly what is not happening. Not happening. People are really, from the ones I get, people are really, I don't know what word I want to use. I don't want to say they're scrimping or anything like that, but I mean, the average person doesn't have that kind of savings at all. Just does not.
I would say that's very, I mean, they don't have clearly enough for a new transmission if you need $5,000 for one of those. I mean, most people can't write that check. It's
most people are really just, honest to God, they are just living, I don't want to say hand to mouth, but that's kind of what it is. I mean, their cash flow works for them on a monthly basis. That's what I want to say.
There's no contingency fund.
No, very
little. And it's at every level.
Well, look at it this way. I mean, there's problems because who can afford $16,000 for a new roof?
Yeah, well, that's if you're lucky.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, two doors, front door, back door, two screen doors. You're looking at $15,000. I mean, people are just in shell shock when they call.
Yeah, it's a whole. That's why when I'm so concerned when I mean, obviously I have a business and I don't pound my business on the show maybe as much as I should, but we do a lot of protection stuff for people with stocks, and people have made a lot of money in stocks. Well, some haven't. Depending, you could have had the wrong stock. There's a lot of wrong ones out there, but if you bought 5,000 shares of Apple when it was $11. I mean, it's been a life-changing event. It's stock appreciation. Whether you're lucky, a genius, doesn't really matter. It's up. And same way, you know, Microsoft was $35 for 8 years. If you would have bought it there and sucked it up for 8 years, now it's $513. Okay, so you did good on that one. I mean, some of the others, Cisco, not so good. Oracle, not until lately, not so good. But now, I guess you're getting but. The risk I see, if all of a sudden, for whatever reason, this has happened before, and you look at the valuations of these stocks, if we take a 40% hit, which everybody goes, oh man, how could you even say something like that on the air? Well, we're up 40% in the last, you know, it's not like we've been steady for a decade. Let's look and see where the S&Ps are, or the spiders. I just say, you know, if all of a sudden, now we've got a, let's go back to, or we're doing a 1 year line here. Let's go back to Max. There we go. I mean, when do you want to go back to 2015? You know, the S&Ps were 200, actually 199. 10 years later, they're 666. So it's not like we haven't had this kind of. I would go right here. We'll go 2020. We're 257, and now we're. So for somebody who says now we're 666, we can only go down 5%. That's as far as we could go. And everything was screaming by. So okay, it's up 400 points in 5 years, and yet we can only go down 5%. Okay, I don't know where that's written on what bathroom wall. Same thing with the houses, Nance. They're 40 something. They used to be, a few years ago, they were, let's say, 300. I think the risk here of the market doing a 40% drop and houses dropping by 25%, where people don't have cash contingencies, the risk is something I've never seen, which I really hope doesn't happen, and probably won't. But it's not like it's not, you know, that it isn't possible. I mean, it's kind of right there. I mean, look at the $2 trillion that are in Bitcoin. Well, where did that come from? Could that go down to $1.5 trillion? Well, duh, why not? I mean, I'm not saying it will. I'm not predicting. I'm not shorted. I'm not telling you to get shorted. I'm just saying I think the risk is pretty dramatic here. What do you think?
I think what you're saying is true. I mean, the people who are buying their home cash for $400,000 and $500,000, that's fine, right? Because if the price of homes go down, they are already in theirs. If they're not moving, it doesn't really matter.
Well, is anybody writing a check for that, Nance, or are people selling another one for $480 and moving? I mean,
that I don't know. I mean, because I don't have the statistics that John had, but most, this, like in the case of Audrey's sales, most of them, well, one sold a couple, two, I think one sold something in India. One was a doctor that came here from Europe. I mean, it's just strange. I mean, it's strange that you got so many at the same time, but I have to assume that those people believe in just paying cash for things, and they finally got there.
Well, I believe in it too. If you got the cash,
right? Well,
I believe if I had $500,000, I could buy a house.
People,
be nice.
A lot of people don't. That's part of the thing. I mean, they say I have all this cash, and I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to leverage everything, and if something happens, that works for. I've seen that since I've grown up in the years, where everything is fine until the first domino falls, or something happens to the person, or something else, and then the dominoes just tumble all the way down the road. You know, there's no. I don't think you should. I personally wouldn't want to buy like own 5 properties and have them all mortgaged to the hilt.
No.
But people do it every day. Yes, sir.
A phenomenon back in the 80s when, you know, interest rates were through the roof, a lot of people couldn't, you know, qualify for the full amount of what they needed to buy, you know, a house with, you know, an institutional lender. So there was a lot of seller financing that was kicked into the pot where the seller was desperate to sell, and they'd take a note back from the buyer, which was, you know, inferior to the first mortgage, to pick up the slack because the interest rates were so, you know, hard to manage. Do you see seller financing in any of the loans you're arranging? Is this ever discussed? Is there also a loan that's going, you know, back to the seller?
Nobody's going. The seller financing is just if someone in fact gives the person a loan. I've seen it a couple times where the seller of the home gets the money down, and you know they act as the landlord, and then they pay him. There's not two mortgages. There's only one. That is what I have seen, John. I have seen where the parents gift the down, like the parent is selling the home to a child. They gift the equity to the child that they need to get out of it, and then the child has to go get the mortgage with. But I haven't seen anybody put a second behind the first as far as the seller goes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I have seen, you know, back in the 80s, you are correct. You could get an 80% loan from the mortgage company and then get a 20% loan. You know, they did first and seconds back to back, and it was 100% financing. That stuff is not even available right now.
Well, yeah, trying to get through a closing. Yeah, trying to get through a closing with that.
They did. Though. I mean, it was 80-20, and it was like, let's just pick somebody. It's like, let's say Chase. They gave them the first mortgage at 80%. They gave them the second mortgage at 20%, and that was a higher rate, and then you didn't have private mortgage insurance. Now they have the private mortgage insurance for anything less than the 20%.
All those games, because I bought a home in Beverly in maybe 1984-ish, and Robin and I had done a couple of remodelings. The games were nothing like today. I mean, you had all kinds. I mean, somebody, if you wanted $100,000, the person wanted to give you you know, 95, you'd say, all right, I'll lend you five for the down payment, or I'll give you five. It would make the price 100. I mean, people did all kinds of weird stuff. Nobody, well, not like today where they go back and check your checking account, and if you get a gift from your dad, your dad's got to sign an affidavit that it's a gift and not a loan. They didn't do any of that stuff in the 80s.
But I believe you. I mean, I believe that to be true. I'm younger than that time, so.
Well, Robin, my partner, fortunately, he's not with us anymore. She jury rigs this one. She was a treasurer of Pullman, assistant treasurer. And she jury rigs this one. I don't know. We were selling this place for like 140, which, you know, was a lot in those days. And we had him doing this and doing that and this. That. Robin, let's just drop the price to 135. What are we doing? This thing's like a Rembrandt. I don't care if I tell people I got 135 or 145. This is not a badge of honor. It looks to me like we're giving them 10 grand back. She goes, well, we are. Well, let's just give them the 10 grand. What are we doing? I mean, some of these things got so involved, Nance. We're giving them 3 grand for the down payment, and then we're doing something else to fix something, and finally go, let's just lower the price. I mean,
I know what you're saying. I mean, that kind of stuff still goes on today, but they give it to them in the form of a credit so that it looks like they actually have more money down than what they have. They still do that, but it serves its purpose if something really is broke or whatever, because it gives them a form of a credit, which they need. But part of the thing is the market has changed so much in, like what John described really went on, what you're describing really goes on. Right now, everybody just wants turnkey or forget it. Back in the 90s, I mean, there was something like when you were talking, Tom, I mean, there was so much flipping going on, it wasn't even funny.
We went to talk about the extreme story of this when the condo craze first hit. This had to be early 80s, maybe, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Maybe before that.
Yeah, late 70s.
Well, there was like a second tier, because I was on the trading floor, so it had to be after 81. And there was remember where the Belden Deli was? On Belden, duh. Well, between Clark Street, between Clark and the lake on Belden, across the street and down the block from where that little shopping center where the deli was, there was this building that was going condo. So Robin and I go up and look at it, and it was kind of chopped up apartments, and, you know, they all needed to be totally remodeled. And, you know, some of them also needed, let's put it this way, I was good enough to where if I bought a place that was brick and all the rooms were the right size, I could do the stuff. But if all of a sudden you said, no, we're going to bust down this wall for that, I'm going, wait a minute, that's a bearing wall. I'm not a structural engineer. That's too far for me. It was above my pay grade, right? But the other stuff, if the kitchen was the right size, I could, you know, get the kitchen remodeled and the bathrooms, that kind of thing. So we go in there and I'm going, Rob, no, these rooms are too small. You know, we don't know some of these walls are holding the whole damn building up, for God's sake. I'm not taking these down. So the real estate lady, I remember her in this short skirt, long blonde hair, still to this day, her phone keeps ringing. And it was not even a cell phone. She had some phones ringing. All these guys on the Board of Trade floor were saying, I'll take one, I'll take two, just because of the square footage. They said, okay, it's X number per square foot. We'll just. So the thing sold out in front of me. I'm standing there with Robin. There's like 8 units in the building. She gets the phone call, and they're all gone. And I'm thinking, well, we didn't have the money to do that, but maybe these guys are right.
Was that the Belden Commonwealth building?
It was across the street toward the lake, right across the alley, whichever that one was. But it wasn't like some huge building, John. It was maybe 8-10 units. And anyway, guess what? Every single one of those things traded again before the closing, and those guys made like 20% on their dough. They never even closed. They sold the contract to somebody. That's how crazy that was. Because we're also coming out of an era where whenever somebody says, you know, could be Audrey, could be any real estate person, whenever they say the interest rates are low, it's the time to buy, I just, you know, something clenches on me. it's That is so untrue, it's scary. You want to buy a place when the interest rates are like 12, because the prices are down to zero, and the interest rates will probably come down, and you just refinance on the way up. It's the best deal you ever had. And I bought a place when the interest rates were, I think, were 12 or something. I never looked back.
Hey, why we're on this subject? What? When do you think the rate interest rates are actually going to fall?
They're not going to.
Okay, so you don't think there's going to be adjustment in the mortgage rate with the feds?
No. I think that the when these inflation numbers start coming out, the Fed is going to try and lower the short-term rate, and the long-term rate, when this inflation rate is known to be 4 or 5%, is going to go straight up. And I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. Yeah, what do you think, Jen?
I think I agree with you, Tim. I don't think they're going to come down, and I think they very likely will rise.
You do, because someone told me yesterday, a client, that he believes that the Feds bought all the paper during COVID for 5 years, so he believes that it will go down in early spring next year.
But the Fed buying the paper is what drives the rates down.
Correct. And he said they'll have to buy more paper because they've been the ones selling it off, and that's why these rates haven't dropped.
Well, they made it to $7 trillion on their balance sheet. Is he predicting 10? There's an end game there somewhere. I don't know where it is.
He's saying that the $7 trillion is going down because they're the one liquidating all their paper right now, and they're the ones that are causing it to stay up.
They're letting it run down slowly. They're retarding it a little bit. But the amount of money that's being created by individual people through stock appreciation, through margin loans, through those kinds of things, the money supply has grown just on its own because of the amount of loans based on wealth and so forth and the money they put in the system before. So the Fed has their job is to maintain the money supply, okay? But sometimes they have to put in to maintain it, sometimes they have to retard to maintain it. And I think what's happening now is they're not retarding fast enough. And normally you would say, how can the money supply be growing the way it is with the Fed balance sheet actually dropping? You would think, wait a minute, they're retarding, but they're not retarding it fast enough. That's fast enough for my taste. For the president's taste, they're retarding it too much. But, you know, I mean, who benefits to this? And, you know, John's going to cringe, but I'm going to say anybody who owns, like, resorts, for instance, who owns property, who owns stocks, who owns cryptocurrency is a major fan of inflation. Not saying personally they like it or whatever, but for their businesses, they're a major fan of inflation. On the other hand, the three of us, four of us, Jimmy, five of us, Ricky, I don't think we're a major fan of inflation. Inflation benefits some people and it doesn't others, and we're the part where it doesn't. Just saying. What do you think, John?
Well, I think even if rates were to drop, and they may, like you were saying, Nancy, and your friend, I'm not sure at this point how much of an improvement that would cause in house sales. I think a lot can happen in the job market we haven't seen play out yet, and I think sentiment, you know, is kind of making people wary of owning property because of all the attendant costs with insurance and homeowners associations and insurance. And even if rates were to come down significantly, say by 2 points or something, I don't know if that would immediately trigger an explosion in house sales. I think I'll be interested to see what would happen if rates were to drop, and I don't think they will. But I don't know if it's going to be a cure-all for what's wrong with the market.
Nance, when they say drop, are they saying 6.75 to 6.25, or are they talking about 6.75 to like 3?
No, they're talking probably in the 4s. And that's why I was interested to see what you guys thought, because...
Well, I think we could go to 6, but the 4 is, well, that's kind of a reach.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I don't know about this. I don't see where it would really benefit anybody. I think we're into a new turn or a new wave already. I don't see interest rates ever being that low again in our lifetime.
Oh.
Well, 4% rate in a normal world almost implies either no inflation or a negative real rate of interest. Because if inflation is 3, then your real rate of interest is 1, which is pretty light. If inflation's 5, you're talking about a negative real rate of interest. And I don't see inflation going down to like 1, do you?
No.
No, no, but when you're listening, it made a good argument. I mean, it made sense when he was saying it, and I thought, I don't know about this. But it doesn't mean you don't listen or you don't try and learn anything or, you know, you just want to know what are people thinking? What are people really getting? And I thought, even if the Fed does lower the rate, what is that really going to do for things? And I think you guys just went through that. It's, if they do lower it, you just feel that the inflation will be higher and things are noticeably higher than what I ever thought they would get to be. Well, yeah, I know I probably sound like my grandfather, but I'm just saying, I never have seen it like this.
Well, you know, what's surprising, and this is not, I mean, I don't need a rant here at this hour, but it's astounding to me, actually I was talking to my buddy, John, you know, you met John Lee, I think, but the other night, and he was talking about, you know, what do you think about this tariff thing? And I said, well, John, you know, what's stunning to me is, I always thought that by the time I got to this age, enough people had an economics course, enough people had some stuff, and that you wouldn't believe somebody who told you the tariffs are paid by other people and not you, but people are believing it. And I'm going to say, Nance, that virtually nobody, if you walked around you and I and Aud were out to dinner in the restaurant, in the bar, or the library, or wherever we are, if you walked around with a microphone and a tape, and you said, when the Fed lowers interest rates, what exactly do they do? I'm going to guess 1 out of 100 would be able to explain to you what they do in terms of what the mechanism is. And if you mentioned it to them, they'd look you have two heads. And it's actually very simple. There's a rate called the federal funds rate, which banks charge each other overnight back and forth through reserves. Because if a guy like John, a big hitter like John, takes $100 million out of Chase and drops it in Wells Fargo, chances are Chase is a little short reserves and Wells Fargo is a little long reserves. So,
right.
So they can borrow one to the other. And then there's, based on the amount of money in the pool, in the system, that could be 3%, 2%, whatever the number happens to be. Well, if the Fed wants to lower rates, they pour more money into the system. So the next night, when Wells Fargo calls Chase, they're going to say, oh, instead of paying 4%, this is an annual rate, it's not that night, it's only 3.97 tonight, or something along those lines. That's what they do. They don't. There's not a billboard somewhere where you put the 4% up, and the day before it was 4.15 or 4.25. That's why they always give you a range. They'll say the range is now gone from 4.25 to 4.5 to 4 to 4.25. So they maintain the federal fund rate in that area by putting money in and out of the system. I think most people think that there's a poster somewhere that they put up there. Well, there isn't. And what happens is, if you start pouring more and more money into the system, to where 6 months later or a year later, whenever it is, inflation starts to perk up, then the person says, well, wait a minute, I'm loaning Nancy $1,000, but at the end of the year, my $1,000 is only going to be worth $900. I need that $100 back, so, which is 10%, plus the $3,000 $30 I'm charging Nance for the interest. Okay, so it's one plus the other, and we haven't seen that in so long that nobody even knows what I'm talking about. I mean, if we end up with a 5% inflation, maybe not quite as bad because it's tariffs. It's a self-inflicted wound. It's a tax, not really a price increase. Might not be as much. But back in the 80s, when the interest rates were 11%, it was because the inflation rate was 9. One was just covering the other, right? Nobody even has that. Nobody has that memory at all, except people my age, unfortunately. John, what do you, right or not?
Yep. People forget.
Well, it's easy to forget if you weren't even born.
Right. And it's so true. Yeah, they just think we're old. You know, it's changing. It's better.
It's like, it's like saying, when was the last time the Cubs were in a World Series before 2016? Well, that was like a century ago. I wasn't here. Yeah. I bet it was a good time, but I wouldn't know. So, Nance, what are the rates right now? What can you do? What can you do somebody for?
You know, now some of it depends on if. I have a father and daughter thing going on right now where So she's buying the old house, he's buying the new house, and she fits in the income bracket where Biden has given them a break, but he's adding it to the people who make, you know, are make more money or wealthier income than hers. She's in the average, she's below the average income for her area, so she gets a break and he does not. And he has to pay towards it. So she's getting like 6.4 and he's getting closer to 6.875. And there's a, boy, there's big divide. Very unhappy that she could have something lower than him. It's so hard to explain.
Was that bill? Did that help anybody, or is that just confusing?
You know what? Most people, it doesn't affect, right? It doesn't. And this person just happens to be, you know, very focused on it, very unhappy about it, and I can understand it. But it isn't, in this case, it just isn't your credit score. It just isn't your down payment. It just isn't, you know, and he's buying a home, so that's always better pricing. But it's the fact that there, you know, we have this extra step now where we've got this formula, we've got to put it in.
Well, yes, who makes up the difference? Who makes up the difference of the...
Well, he is.
No, I'm saying, but who
got a lower rate? And he's going to pay more than what he really should. And it used to be the other way around. Now it's not. So it's a very unfortunate situation. And then the same insurance at the same company, everything's the same. She's going to pay an extra $800 in insurance because she's a newer customer. But there are reasons for that. I dug into it, and there are reasons for it. She took more in the extra policies, like she's taking the sub pump going out. She's taking a special, not flood policy, but if there's water damage. I mean, they've added extra things to the insurance policies now, so their losses aren't so great. You know, the insurance company's losses aren't so great anymore. Remember how we were talking one day about how who's got the water damage? What's going on in Florida? Well, that's kind of hit up here. And so that's what really made up the difference. It wasn't just apples to apples. It was apples to oranges, then cranberries. So the daughter can choose to take less, I explained. But, I mean, it's everything I look at, I'm like, oh, my God. I can't believe how complicated the situation has got.
So the bill says that if the market rate's 6.5, somebody who makes a little bit less is going to get 6.4, and somebody who makes a little more and allegedly can afford it is going to make that up by getting a 6.6.
Correct.
God, that is so insane. I can't go there.
Yes, I didn't.
I didn't put it in. I mean, it's got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with the this law he passed about the rich are rich and the poor are poor, and we have to make up that difference. And the rich have to give back. The rich have to give back. So it was the opposite. Now it's not. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult to explain it, or I think it's difficult for the customer to swallow it. And I think that's another reason people aren't necessarily going to go.
It sounds crazy to me.
Complicated. It is very complicated. This is just one where it was just so apparent, and I'm like, oh my God, this is just not going to work.
Saturday, Dan might be having his apple squeezing. You think John would actually come down and do some manual labor and squeeze some apples?
I don't know.
I'll film it.
God.
You'll film it.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that? Are you coming?
I want to watch the pros do it.
We got some guys that are workers. Some of the softball guys that are workers. The thing you got to worry about, the guys that are cutting the apples, if they're boozing up, they don't cut a finger. You know.
Is it just a big press?
It's like a four-step process. You got to cut them, you got to shred them, and then you put them in the cheesecloth. You got this huge press, and it's a big deal. 500 pounds of apples makes maybe 35 gallons, 30 gallons of stuff.
What do the women do? Go out and till the land?
Oh, no, they help.
They pick all the apples?
They're cutters. We picked them all Saturday.
When are we going animal picking?
Well, they all got done.
Apple picking.
They all got done Saturday.
This past Saturday, yeah. We picked the apples.
Oh, I did a bunch.
I didn't. Did you go to an apple farm?
Well, yeah. Duh. What do you think? We went to Costco?
Did
Odd go? We went to Costco.
You went to Costco?
No, we went to the orchard and picked them. I got some Red Delicious, I got some Galas, I got some Romas, I got a bunch of Jonathans, all kinds of stuff.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah, you know.
And did you get the core first time, or did you just put everything
in? Oh, no, you put everything in there. You're pressing it.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, you got all these five-gallon buckets of like, the stuff. It's what everything squeezed out of it. You throw some water in there and, I don't know, some sugar and some yeast, and you make hard stuff out of that. I don't know how to do that, but Dan knows all this stuff. In addition to being president of PTI, he knows how to do all this stuff. But it's a great group, and everybody brings all kinds of chow, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, text me and John the information.
Well, I mean, you could probably come with Audrey. She comes. And maybe John will drive up. Now he's got a car. John has no excuse now.
I got wheels.
He's got wheels. He's got locomotion.
Give me the details, Tom.
Did he get a tricycle? Bicycle? What?
He's got one of those power scooters. He's going to be going down.
SUV.
To be going down to Ryan and one of these powered scooters.
How's your recovery going, Nancy?
Slow. Very slow. Very slow. They're expecting that I could be released January 15th. I think that's crazy.
Released to where?
Like back to work or whatever I'm supposed to be doing. But
I mean, you're not in jail.
No, but I mean, there's very... They are very limited on what I can do. I have so many questions for this guy if I ever get to see him. All I'm seeing right now is the PA.
Oh, God. That's another whole story.
It's very slow. I mean, like, for PT, they lift my arm and move it all around. I'm not even allowed to lift it yet, which I just don't understand. So many people say, why? You know, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that. I don't know why mine is like this, but... After 2.5 months, it's been 2.5 months. We're going on 3 months here. I don't really want to blow it because I haven't got. I wouldn't want to go through this again.
Oh God, no! You gotta pay attention.
Yeah, well, so I don't know why mine is different. I have no explanation for it. I don't understand it, but I know it does get sore. Like this weekend, I treated myself and went back to bed. First time I slept in the bed since before the surgery, and in the morning it was turning black and blue, and I thought, well, I guess they were right about that.
Oh, God. Well, Nancy, you know we're all with you. So, okay, well, you're not going to be doing the press, but maybe you can stand by the grill and tell me when stuff is done, and I'll take it off.
Yeah, I can do all of that, just not the press. I could even go apple picking, I think.
Well, I was supposed to have my two little nieces help me out, but one was useless, and the other one saw a bee, and she took off, so I had no helpers.
Well, where was Odd?
Odd's not going to go pick apples.
Oh, she didn't go pick apples.
No, I went from downtown to the apple joint, and then I went to her place.
And how do you like the furniture?
Don't get me started.
Okay. I guess that ends that question. Don't you think, John? Dead. But make sure you ask it next Saturday, because I want to hear the answer.
Let's just say I was very happy with the old furniture. But that didn't last. You know how this goes. S&P futures up 33, NASDAQ futures up 156.
Guys.
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.